Hey, meet me on the floor tonight. Show me how to move like the water underneath water. The dancing lights. Be mine. Azizam.
There you go.
Welcome back to the Habibi House Podcast.
Yola,
we have a very special guest today, an Azizam himself.
Yes.
Actor, legendary comedian, and author, Maz Jobrani.
Maz Jobrani. But Maz you almost Jobrani. Nailed it. Oh, you man. Almost nailed it.
No, he's doing it so you corrected him.
Well, also because don't Arabs got Mazin, right?
Yeah, Mazin.
Mazin. Oh, you say Mazin? You say Mazin?
Mazin.
Mazin, whatever. What is potato, it? Potato. Maz, like Mazda, Maserati, oh, Lamaz, Mazatlan. All
then,
of those.
And then Jobrani?
Jobrani, yes. Jobrani. Not Jabroni, but Jobrani.
Jobrani. Ooh.
Yeah.
The Jobrani. Life of an immigrant, right? Yeah, half the conversation.
Atif, what's your last name?
Hashwi.
Yeah.
Do you have the thing that you say when you're at the club and you have to yell your name? Just like, what do you say? You just say,
I haven't been to the clubs in a while.
Or like in a really loud, it's like, hey, yeah, what's your name?
Yeah. Well, you know, I use that thing of Maz, like Mazda, Maserati, Mazatlan. Because even Iranians sometimes will say Maz. Just because, you know, it's not Matt. It's not Mike.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
so
yeah.
So it takes a minute for them to figure it out, you know?
Yeah.
And then I had the fortune or misfortune of having the last name Jobrani,
mm-hmm.
which in Persian it means to make amends for, Jobran Kardan.
Mm-hmm.
But the wrestlers started calling each other Jabroni.
Jabronis.
So
yeah.
Now, sometimes when I'm doing like a radio show, I'll be like, listen, by the way, it's Maz. Like, I got you. And then they'll be like, we're here with Maz Jabroni. And I'm like, no, you got it wrong.
Damn, that's a struggle.
Struggles. What's your last name, Asad?
You know, Tony Shalhoub?
Yeah.
It's the same.
Asad Shalhoub?
Shalhoub.
Is he your uncle?
Basically.
You wish.
Okay, good.
maybe he'd have more success. You know, help me out, bro. Nepotism. We got to use
bro.
It somehow.
Yeah, bro.
Habibi.
Anyways, you've been a voice that's been breaking our stereotypes and cracking us up for years. You've been seen on Curb Your Enthusiasm. Heard him on NPR's Wait, Don't Tell Me.
Yes.
And watched him light up stages around the world with stand-up that's smart, sharp, and unapologetically Iranian.
I like that. All right. There we go. Let's do this.
From growing up in the U.S. as an Iranian kid performing at the White House.
Yeah.
Maz has done it all. Maz. Which one is it?
Mazda. Just think of a Maserati, okay, the car. Mazda.
He's never going to step foot in one.
Maserati Atif. Maz has done it all, Atif. And he's here Atif. To talk about the hustle.
Call my teeth.
And everything in between. Yeah, don't do that. I have childhood trauma associated with pronunciations.
All right, well, you know,
let's get into it.
Straight up from the jump, we played that Azizam song. I've been wanting to ask, good or bad for the culture?
I think it's great. So first of all, Azizam in Persian means my dear. It's like Habibi or Habibti, right? And so I guess what happened was Ed Sheeran was working with a producer, Ilya, who's this Swedish-Iranian producer. He produces, you know, big artists. And somehow the conversation came about of them doing a song around the Persian culture and Azizam. And then they brought in another Iranian-American a music video director named Saman Kesh, and they got together, made this great video, made this great song, and it's just a celebratory song. It's a fun song, and our community, like your community, mm-hmm. has had so much negative press for the past 50 years plus 100%. That anytime we have anything remotely good happen in our culture, yeah. we're like, we love it.
You love any representation. Anyway,
so I'll give you another example, for me at least.
Yeah.
There was a pitcher in baseball, Major League Baseball, named Yu Darvish.
Mm-hmm.
Y-U-D-A-R-V-I-S-H. And years ago when he started, I think he still might be playing, he's at the end of his career. Years ago when he started, I was like, oh, this guy came from Japan. His last name is Darvish, which is a, you know, the twirling dervish, right?
Yeah.
And Darvish is a Persian sounding last name.
Yeah.
So I got to look this guy up. And his dad is Iranian and lived in Japan and had a Japanese mom.
Wow.
And I was like, yes, that's one of us. Uh-huh. So again, I think that we've had so much negativity because we all know. That people in our community there's good people, there's bad people.
Mm-hmm.
But unfortunately, I think that the image that the West has of our people is mostly bad people. Mm-hmm. And so if you can have something that's good, and if you get somebody like Ed Sheeran doing it, who is one of the biggest pop stars in the world, you go, oh, this is going to be great for us, right? So everyone's excited.
Yeah. As long as I think it's the corollary to that is that as long as he's putting on, like, he's not just saying Azizam and none of the creators are Iranian. You know,
absolutely.
What I mean?
No, listen, it's good. Well, especially nowadays, when I first started doing stand up 26 years ago, there weren't that many Middle Eastern people in comedy, music, a lot of that stuff. We had a handful here and there, but not that many. Now, in this generation, you guys have your podcast. Somebody's got it, a film director. Someone's do, and it's great to see people because our cultures are cultures where our parents wanted us to be lawyers, doctors, engineers. Yeah. That thought of go be an artist was not a thing.
Mm-hmm. Right.
But because a lot of us grew up in the West, we were exposed to that. Like the guy, Ilya, who's the music producer out of Sweden, I saw a post on his page where he said his father was into music or was a musician, I think, and then he took after that, and now he's this big music producer. Or Saman, I was talking to Saman Kesh, and he said, yeah, you know, I just was, you know, I did not fit the mold that my family wanted, and so I went this way. And I'm similar to that in that I grew up in a culture, especially, again, in my generation, most of my friends became lawyers and doctors and maybe engineers. Mm-hmm. Or business or something, but it was just not for me. And I've actually analyzed myself more. When you get into the arts, I think you analyze yourself more. You're more open to analyzing yourself. And I realized that one of the things is I might have ADHD. I haven't been diagnosed with it, but I might have it.
Yeah.
And so I picked the perfect profession because if I had to sit in an office and watch somebody talk, I would just constantly be, you know, daydreaming and dozing off. But when I'm on stage for an hour and people are looking at me, mm-hmm. I have to pay attention for that hour.
Yeah.
Or if I'm on a set and we're doing a scene, I got to pay or in a podcast. So to that point, I'm happy that there are people from our background that are good enough, by the way, because it's not just like it wasn't like Ed Sheeran was like, oh, I need a Persian producer and I need a Persian music director.
Yeah.
And these guys have never done anything. He goes, just go do it. No, these guys are in the game doing legit stuff with other people, and then they get tapped to come and play with one of the biggest pop stars in the world.
Right. And what you said, there's two things that you said that kind of are similar. You said your community and our community, some people would say that Iranian and, like, let's say the Levant are all part of the MENA community, right? And then you say the word Persian versus Iranian. Another thing I really want to ask you is, first of all, do you believe that Iranians and other Middle Easterners should be all grouped in the same?
So first of all, I think because of our numbers in America, it helps if we can come together and be part of the MENA group, which is Middle East North African.
Right.
The reason is because we know that numbers make a difference in America. Sure. And that's why, again, our cultures are very similar. Whether you're in Palestine or Lebanon or Turkey or Iran or Iraq, there's a lot of similarities in the cultures, right?
Definitely.
And so one of the things that we have in our cultures is we have a mistrust of government.
Sure.
And so when the Census Bureau comes out every 10 years and we tell our people, don't mark white, mark Arab or whatever, other and Arab, or put other and Persian, or other and Middle East North African.
Yeah.
There's a reason behind it, because we want to show that we have representation. Because if you have enough of numbers, then states and federal governments have to provide certain services for those people. Right. And also, by the way, then your voice means something. We saw in this past election when they were going to Dearborn to get votes because they knew that they could, Trump was like, I can go there and get these votes. And he did, right? And so that's crazy. Your community has some influence, it's important. So that's why I think it's good for us to be one community in that sense. But at the same time, as we grow, hopefully, in America, whether it's certain Arab communities or the Iranian community or whatever, hopefully we can also continue to educate people on the fact that we're not the same people.
Sure.
And it doesn't mean that one's better than the other. It just means that, hey, one group is Cuban, the other group is Mexican. They're not the same.
Yeah.
So similarly, one group is, when I was first acting, you get an audition for a brown guy who's a bad guy.
Oh, I've had a couple of those.
Yeah, and he might be Arab, he might be Pakistani, he might be Indian, he might be Iranian. You'd show up and there's like that whole, everybody from those backgrounds were there. And one of us would get it. I got a bunch of parts playing Indians. One of us would get it.
Nice.
Now we're at a point you know, 10, 15, 20 years later, where there's enough actors from those backgrounds, especially worldwide, that could play those parts. Sure. So it's nice to see that progress. And then when you go to the debate about Iranian versus Persian, you know, I kind of intermix them now. For example, they say in my culture, they say, or they're in the Iranian community, they say when you're talking about the language, you say Persian versus Farsi. But when I speak in Persian, I will say Farsi. I'll say the word Farsi. Because they were saying, like, it's kind of like saying, like, you know, the Germans say, you know, speakest du Deutsch. So when you say you speak Farsi, it's like saying, do you speak Deutsch versus do you speak German? So the Western way of saying it is Persian in that sense. So that's that. And then the country Iran, I came to America right before the 79 revolution. And once we came, Iranians in Iran took a lot of Americans hostage, you know, the embassy. And then the and then the negativity that we had over here towards Iranians was really bad, to the point where even some of my friends, my Egyptian friends and others, were like, we were getting crap because of you guys. Similar to like 9/11. When 9/11 happened, they were shooting Indian Sikhs. Like, you know, unfortunately, racists don't know any nuance.
Racists don't discriminate.
So they don't discriminate.
So the,
So I'll just finish that thought. Yeah. So early on, a lot of Iranians.
So you rebranded at that point. It was like a rebranding.
Well, because it used to be called the Persian Empire.
Yeah.
And the word Persia came from when the Greeks named, it was a Greek name given to Iran. Okay. So when Reza Shah, who was the Shah, who then his son was deposed, when he took over Iran in after World War I, he changed it back to Iran. And Iran is the land of the Aryans. It comes Aryan.
So it was always Iran.
It was Iran. Yeah. And then but then once we come to America and we're getting beaten up and we're getting discriminated against.
Yeah, survival tactic.
People go, oh, I'm Persian. And then Americans, oh, okay, whatever, you know. And then eventually.
Like the rugs?
Yeah, exactly. And then eventually, I think a lot of Iranians were like, well, no, I'm proud of my Iranian heritage. So now I'm going to say I'm Iranian. And again, now I'm at a point where it's like I just intermix them depending on what I'm talking about. If I'm talking about the culture, I say Persian.
Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. If I'm talking about the country, I say Iran.
Yeah.
So if food is Persian.
Because in L.A., for example, I really noticed I have this theory where anybody who introduces themselves as Persian versus Iranian has this Arab, anti-Arab or anti-Muslim because they don't want to be. They're like, it's always the Islamic Republic of Iran. It's never just Iran.
Yeah.
So when I start to notice these things, I think there's a little bit of insidious or nefarious reasoning why they would say something like that.
Yes,
it's like saying myself, like saying a Lebanese person, I'm Phoenician.
Yeah,
I'm not Lebanese. I'm Phoenician or I'm not Arab. I'm Phoenician because you want to separate yourself from Islam.
Yeah,
and that's the same parallel where it's happening between Persia and
Iran. I think you're right to notice that for some people. Some people, like I said, it's just casual. I'm Persian. I'm Iranian. Whatever.
Yeah.
But some people, to your point, because what happened was, you know, a lot of people in the West fled Iran because they were, you know, whether they were Jewish and had to get out, or they were successful under the Shah and they had to get out, or they were whatever it was, they left. And it became a very dark place. And it continues to be, you know, it's a dictatorial government. I mean, the country is good. The government is bad. And so to that point, a lot of Iranians, they got a really bad taste in their mouth for Islam because it was the Islamic revolution, right?
Sure.
So to your point, some Iranians are like, I don't want to be associated with Islam. I'm Zoroastrian, which was the earlier religion. And then some, like you said, I don't want to be confused with Arab and all that. It's one thing to be like, and I make fun of it on stage because like when we first started doing stand-up comedy, Mitzi Shore, who was the owner of the Comedy Store, put a show together with me. Ahmed is Egyptian. Aaron Cater is Palestinian. Sam Tripoli, who's Armenian. Everyone from that part of the world. We had a show, and she called it the Arabian Nights.
Nice.
And I remember, and I talk about this on stage.
Was that before you got like passed at the?
No, I was already passed. So in
I was watching your special. You were talking about her grabbing your arm.
That was all. Yeah. So that was like 99 or so, 99 or 2000 when I got passed.
And then she tried to make you wear the outfit, and you know.
She wanted me to wear the turban. Yeah, but I was a regular at the club. Okay. And then she was like, I need more Middle Easterners. So she found Ahmed, and I recommended Aaron, and I recommended Sam, and they all came together, and we did this thing, and it's called the Arabian Nights. And to your point, Assad, there were times when Iranians would come to the show and be like, oh, I enjoyed the show, you know, but we are not Arab, we are Persian. And I was like, I know, I didn't name the show, the Jewish lady named the show, leave me alone. So there are some people who really try to differentiate that. And I think the question becomes, what's the intention? If somebody says to me, like, if I'm at a, you know, in Dallas doing a radio show and someone goes, so what's it like being Arab? Okay, now there's a moment for me to educate them.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. Actually, Iranians aren't Arabs, you know, similar languages, Islam, different types of Islam, et cetera, et cetera. And I usually use the Cuban, Mexican example.
Yeah.
But if you have somebody where you go, oh, Arab, no, I'm not, you know, like it's that, like, kind of,
you feel it.
You're like, dude, just calm down. You know, your shit stinks, you know.
It's like Cuban Brazilian, right? I think more because like the language is different too. So it's not Spanish.
Yeah, you're right. This is a good point. It
is. So it's like they're speaking like Portuguese over there, which is like Farsi and Arabic. It's not even Spanish. Like, what are you talking about?
Yeah, similar character. We borrow your guys's P from Farsi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So we can say things like. Venus.
Instead
of, you know, we don't have the P.
Same alphabet, though. I could, like, whenever I see Farsi, I'm like, I could read this, but I have no idea what it means.
Yeah.
Like, almost, like a couple different letters.
And there's a lot of Arabic words, obviously, that are in the Persian language. We also have French words. And this all just
shows
you. It's
one of the most longest empire.
It's an ancient civilization. It's been around a long time. And again, at one point, it was 70% of the known world was under the Persian Empire.
Wow.
And we had the things that the Iranians are proud of. And I don't know I'm not a historian, so I don't know the exact details. But like there was Cyrus the Great, who was this king who supposedly when he would conquer, he would let people practice their religion.
Mm-hmm.
And so he was almost like a benevolent king, I should say.
Yeah.
And so
like a nice guy.
Nice guy. I mean, somewhat.
Hey, I won't kill you for being a different religion.
Well, they would cut heads off. They would rape and pillage, and then be like, the survivors, you guys can do your religion.
Yeah.
But there's something called the Cyrus Cylinder that a lot of Iranians are very proud of, and they put a replica of it in Century City.
Really?
It had the first human rights charter, everyone has a right to this, that, the other. And now that is also, when you enter the United Nations, they have that over there. So there's a lot that Iranians are proud of and a lot that Iranians are angry about. And you know, like any of our communities, there's division. It's not like we're one monolithic, group.
But, and then going back about the MENA and the census, hopefully by 2030, we're not going to be writing it in. It's actually federally recognized already. So they're bringing it. MENA on the
I
census.
I don't trust it,
coming.
Man. They're trying to round us up
and
again.
And then in California, they're voting on it this week, actually. A lot of my colleagues and friends are going up to Sacramento to
Didn't you go to the... You went to the
Yeah, I went to Culver, Culver City, City Council.
They were talking about it, right?
Yeah, I was talking to some council members and just telling people about AB 91. Look out for it. Hopefully MENA gets on the census.
But I hope so. You know, on the other hand, there's, you know, the Trump administration has tried to limit the census in terms of, you know, they want to have less minority representation so that they can continue to maintain power in other ways. So they were trying to do that before, where they were making it harder to fill out the census. They were like cutting people. You know, in the past, people would go knock on doors and be like, did you fill out your census?
Right.
They were like, don't do that. You know, don't remind them. And by the way, make people feel like if they do fill it out, that we'll know who they are and we'll come after them. So they put that fear in communities. And then you got like your grandfather is like, I'm not filling this out.
You know? Like, I am white.
Yeah.
That's crazy. What was I going to say? Oh, you're talking about Trump and stuff. That guy is crazy.
Is that all? Is that the commentary?
That's pretty much it. That was great. I think they
added
an op-ed.
They added some more tariffs. They added even more tariffs and sanctions.
It's nuts.
He's a tariffist.
Are you a tariffist or?
A tariffist. That's funny, right? A tariffist. Definitely, he's a tariffist. Did you guys see the thing that they were revealing? So one of his main advisors. So if you go, there's clips of Trump from like the early 80s complaining about trade deficits, like going like Japan is eating us for lunch and all this other stuff. And so he's been a proponent of imposing huge tariffs on these countries for years. And I don't think he quite understands the idea of, because I've heard a few economists describe the whole idea of trade deficit, where you go, we buy more from Vietnam than Vietnam buys from us.
Sure.
Because we have more money, mm-hmm. and they make stuff cheap.
Yeah.
So if we're upset and we go, hey, Vietnam, you need to buy stuff from us too. Vietnam's like, we don't have the money to buy it from you.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things about the trade deficit, which is it's good if we're going back and forth. Now, China's a whole other ball game, but again, you don't just say, oh, 200%, whatever, 150% tariffs, and that's it. Like, you surgically can go through it and make it so that the stock market and the economy doesn't crash. But one of his main advisors, who is a tariff hawk, is a guy named Peter Navarro. I don't know if you know about this guy, white-haired guy. And supposedly what happened was Peter Navarro had written a book called Death by China. It's all about how China's kicking our ass.
Yeah.
And I guess at some point in the first administration, Jared Kushner came across the book and thought, oh, this guy would be good to meet with. So he comes and meets with Trump. You know, they're speaking the same language. He becomes one of Trump's economic advisors. In his book, Peter Navarro is quoting an economist who is saying that tariffs are good for America. Like, this is a good way to go.
Yeah.
And the economist that he's quoting is a guy named Ron Vera. And he keeps quoting Ron Vera in his book. Well, turns out Ron Vera is not a real person. It's someone that Peter Navarro made up. And not only did he make him up, the name Ron Vera is just an anagram of his last name, Navarro.
Oh my God.
So he took Navarro, his own name,
oh my God,
played with it, made Ron Vera, and that's the guy who told us we should go into tariff wars. And here we are.
An imaginary guy. Here we are.
Ron Vera.
It's like reading a Harry Potter book.
People can look it up. Look up Ron Vera. It's pretty crazy.
Oh, my God.
V-A-R-A. Ron Vera.
All right.
People believe anything these days.
And then you're talking about your, like you said, you on stage, you talk about the Persian cats and stuff like that. You had a very, like, you were just posting a TikTok, for example, right before we started. Would you say that was your most viral moment? And like, now when you perform, are you kind of seeking those moments more, or is it just kind of more organic?
Well, first of all, yeah, the joke I used to do was similar to what you said about how Iranians don't like to say they're Iranian, we like to say we're Persian. This is back in 2005, 2006, 2007 when we did the Axis of Evil comedy tour.
Great.
And
tour.
It was the first time you had four Middle Easterners on an American TV show. We ended up on Comedy Central with our special, and it really, you know, we got a lot of eyeballs on it.
Yeah. And all you guys have been ever since then.
Yeah, that was a time where, like, because before that, what I was known for was I was in Friday After Next as a character, Molly, who was the donut shop owner.
Mm.
So people would be like, hey, you're Molly. But then after the special came out, hey, you're Maz Jobrani.
Yeah.
And part of that was it was early on with YouTube.
Yeah.
And the way things would go viral is people had an email list with, like, let's say 50 people, and they would take the link and say, check out this joke. And then... And somehow I kept seeing it circulating, and I would be on those lists, and people are just sending them out. And I was like, nice. Oh, my video's
you
going
went viral
around.
On emails.
I did. Yeah. I did. And it was crazy because the joke was all about how Iranians, we're trying to blend in. We don't want to say we're Iranian. We say we're Persian. And I go, we're Persian, like the cat, meow. Yeah. You know. And then I go, I'm soft like the rug, hello.
Yeah.
So that was the thing, Persian like the cat, meow. And that did become very viral to the point where we went to the Middle East with Ahmed, Aaron Kader, myself. There was a Korean named Won Ho Chung who joined us. He lives in Dubai. And it was in 2007, end of 2007. We did a 5-country tour, Lebanon, Kuwait, Dubai, UAE, Egypt, and Jordan.
Mm.
And it was crazy because... we went to see, because part of what we would do is we on the tour, it was like, it was 27 shows in 30 days, sold out, rock and roll.
Wow.
And we were in Jordan. We go sightseeing.
Yeah.
So we went to see Petra. We're in Petra.
Yeah.
We're walking in Petra, and all of a sudden, these Jordanian guys are like skateboarding there or something, and they go, oh my God, Maz Jobrani, Persian cat, meow. And I was like, oh, my God, it made its way here.
Wow.
And so at that time, that was definitely the most viral thing I had going on.
They got it in their email over there? Or how do they?
Well, actually what happened there was, so we went out on Comedy Central. Back then there was DVDs. People had DVDs.
Oh.
And at one point, Ahmed was traveling to the Middle East. comes across a guy named Jamil Abu Warda, who was working for something called Showtime Arabia.
Whoa.
And Jamil says, hey, we should get this special here. We bring the special. They aired it on Showtime Arabia in the Middle East.
Nice.
That's where people know about it. That's where
they start bootlegging it.
Well, I'll tell you about the bootleg in a second. So that thing did so well over there that, like, for example, in Lebanon, we had promoters in different places. And the promoter in Lebanon is like, we got a 1,000-seater at the Casino du Liban.
Oh, yeah.
And we'll do one night. And we did it. Sold out. Added a second night, sold out. Yep. Third night, sold out. Fourth night, sold out. Fifth night, so five nights, sold out. Matter of fact, we met Nemer there. He opened for us.
Yeah.
And it was it was just this thing. People
just kept on going.
People started finding it, right? Okay. And to your bootleg point, there's a place. Sorry. It was called, I think it was called Hamoudis or something.
Hamoudis
in Amman, Jordan, that sold bootleg DVDs of every bootleg you could imagine.
Yeah, yeah.
They're like, we don't have Maz Jabrani. We have
Khalil Gibran. We have
Rumi poem. Is that okay?
Well, it was crazy because this guy had everything you could imagine. So you could go in and be like, can I get season 3 of Seinfeld? And go into the attic and come back with it. So we walk in and he's got this big poster of Access to Evil there. And I'm like, oh my God, you got our, I was flattered that you bootlegged us.
That's awesome.
And we're like, how much? He's like, $1. I'm like, yeah, come on, you get more.
Come on.
You know?
It's mad. It's mad. Bro.
You did reverse bartering.
Exactly. Like, I pay more. Yeah.
You should make them pay more. Yeah. This is very good stuff.
No, it was our first, like, feeling of rock and roll. I wrote a book. It's called I'm Not a Terrorist, but I played one on TV. And I say going from the United States to the Middle East, going over the Atlantic, like we became the Beatles. Mm. Meaning like what? Like in our version of it. We landed in Dubai and they said, we have a press conference for you. And we're like, press conference? Who's coming to our press conference? 20 different news organizations.
Wow.
What's it like being a comedian of Middle Eastern descent? The King of Jordan invited us to the palace. We went and met him.
Really?
And he said, talk about viral things. Mm-hmm. We said, how did you see our special? He goes, I ride a Harley. Email, exactly. It was an email. No, he goes, I ride a Harley. And he goes, I have a group of guys we ride with from Northern California to Southern California. Mm-hmm. And one of the guys handed me your DVD. And I watched it, and I love it. And and he came to the show, and then he invited us to the palace. So it was kind of like it was our first taste of rock and roll.
Nice, oh, wow.
Yeah,
love that.
Was it a bootleg DVD or was it a real one?
I think
one?
He got the real one. I hope.
If your comedic voice were an Iranian dish, what would it be, and why?
I told you earlier how we're all the same, and it's all peace and love. But Persian food is the best. I'm sorry, Lebanese.
Persian food.
Lebanese close.
Are we up there with you or
Lebanese
what?
Lebanese is close, but Persian food is amazing.
Give us top.
So top three for me.
Ordering.
First of all, if you go to a Persian restaurant, you're going to get the rice with the saffron and all that stuff, and then kebabs. And then the two kebabs are the ground beef and the steak kebab, or the ground chicken and the steak, like the breast of chicken. Delicious, delicious. But we get toppings. One of them is called gourmet sabzi, which is the greens, and it's sour and it's savory. Oh, it's amazing. And the other one is fesenjoun, which has walnuts and pomegranates and chicken again. I mean, our food is really good. So,
can you? What are the what's your favorite restaurants out here?
I always go in LA. I go to Daria, which is on Santa Monica near Bundy.
Okay.
And then there's a place in Glendale called Rafi's Place.
Okay.
And that's amazing. It's another amazing place.
Is that
Rafi's? I think they're Persian Armenian, maybe.
Nice.
Yeah, I know. You would think they're Lebanese. They're not. It's a Persian restaurant.
No. We were just there.
And by the way, you guys know when you go to Persian restaurants, like they give you like rice for four people.
Oh, yeah.
It's crazy. So you always got to be like, can I substitute some of the rice for salad or something?
Yeah. Or another kebab.
Yeah. But it's great. It's great food.
That's cool. Shout out to those people.
Shout out.
Yeah, I mean, there's because you have lahm ajoun, we have lahm bajin. It's like this, it's literally the same food, but different
it's
pronunciation.
There's some similarities, definitely. We do kashk ebadem jun, which is the eggplant with kashk, which is basically like a cream. And that's the appetizer.
Yeah,
man. It's like I always say, our food is a great way to win people's hearts and minds. Feed them. What's up, Habibi? How are you, my friend?
Speaking of feed them, you guys got the
food.
Yeah,
I'm just kidding. The vibes.
The vibes.
The vibes.
Just got Dominic Andre in the building here. Lebanese creator.
Yeah, he just started a new dating app.
Yeah,
it's called Olive.
Are you on the market? Are you single?
I'm married, but you know we are allowed four wives. We're allowed four wives.
Happily.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Olive oil. Yeah, that's great. Olive is great. Olive oil.
Yeah. We'll talk about that later. But yeah, man.
What's happening, brother? Right on time.
Right into the dance. Right into the early dance.
Yeah.
All right. Sorry to be late, man.
He just hopped off a flight, right?
Yeah, from San Francisco.
LAX.
Arab Standard Time, AST, buddy.
You know.
We have PST, Persian Standard Time. Arab Standard Time
is crazy. Yeah. You guys have PST?
PST.
You guys are on Persian Los Angeles time.
Persian Standard Time, yeah. Funny. Should we start over again?
Let's start
over.
Yeah, let's start over.
So it's Maz, not Maz.
Maz? Like Mazda.
Mazizam. You got it?
That's your next special, right?
Mazizam. It should be Mazizam.
Mazizam.
Yeah, yeah.
Cool. I know the word June.
June means deer.
Deer.
Yeah.
So that's our Habibi. June is Habibi.
June basically. And Aziz is all. They're both Habibi. Yeah.
I did a play in USC called My Dear Hussein. It was about the Iran-Iraq War.
Oh,
and
wow.
I played a little Iranian kid named Javad.
Oh, that's cool.
And there was the main girl was her name was Parvaneh, which is named after a butterfly.
That's my mom's name. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, Parvaneh.
Wow, it's a beautiful name. It's like one
cool,
of
right?
the five words I still remember.
Yeah.
But it was crazy time. I love the culture. And I remember, you know, and we even said about like Hollywood, they also included like a Middle Eastern category recently.
Yeah.
I don't know if you know that. So it's like, it's, you know, it's happening, you know, and then there's like less terrorist roles, I feel like.
Yeah, listen, from the time I started, when I first started, again, there was a lot of terrorist roles.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the Iran-Iraq, I'm sorry, the invasion of Iraq and invasion of Afghanistan happened. And at that point, some TV shows were trying to show Iraqis or Afghans suffering during these wars. Matter of fact, one time, this was interesting.
Yeah.
There was a show called E-Ring with Dennis Hopper. I don't know if you guys know who Dennis Hopper is. He's a great actor. And it was Dennis Hopper and Benjamin Bratt. Okay. And they played like, you know, Dennis Hopper was a former, you know, intelligence guy, maybe in the Marines, and Benjamin Bratt was a newer guy who was the hero.
Okay.
And so we did an episode where I played, I think I was playing an Iraqi, I think. Maybe it was an Afghan, whatever. It was somewhere, it wasn't Iranian, it was one of those others. And we're in a mosque and we are just, you know, going about our business. And white extremists, like right-wing extremists, hijack the mosque.
Hijack.
Yeah, so they come in and they take us prisoner.
Okay.
And I was like, whoa, like that's a flip.
Yeah.
And it turns out that my character was a former Marine and my daughter's in there too. And so in the process, somehow I escape.
Mm-hmm.
And then now I'm in the whatever control room helping them figure out where everybody was so they can go in as like a SEAL team or whatever and rescue everybody. And I spoke to the writer because when I first saw the script and I got the part, I go, oh, the writer must be an Arab dude or some Middle Eastern guy. He was a white guy. So I went up to him. I go, you wrote this? He goes, yeah. I go, what's your background? He goes, my mom's Norwegian and my dad is whatever, you know, Dane or something. And he goes, I'm painfully white. And then I asked him, I go, well, how did this come about? And he goes, well, you know, there's been so much depiction of the other thing happening where it's like the Arab dude is hijacking the white people.
Right.
He goes, I decided to flip it. And he goes, and I go, and how, and it got approved. He goes, be honest with you, I didn't think the network was going to approve it either. He goes, I'm surprised they did.
Yeah, well, it goes back to the Ed Sheeran stuff, like a white guy bringing on or telling the narrative. I think the only reason that it got greenlit is because he was white. At that time, if an Arab guy pitched
probably,
it, I don't think
maybe at that time. But now we have, you know, we got Rami, we got Mo, we got others who are able to tell their stories. Sure. Maybe back then, you're right, there wasn't anybody. There just weren't that many people from our backgrounds. Yeah. I also did in the movie The Interpreter, which was Sean Penn, Nicole Kidman, directed by Sidney Pollack. I played an Arab-American Secret Service agent.
So nice. Did you have to do all these like hand-to-hand combat? Like, were you training for these roles? Did you have?
No.
You played an Arab Secret Service.
You're like a Marine, Secret Service. All these.
Yeah. Well, so all of that.
It's called acting.
Well, for the Marine, it was funny because they took my. They asked me to go because part of the production was they wanted to have a picture of me in a Marine outfit. So it's funny. So they photoshopped it. So to this day, I have it somewhere. And I posted it somewhere. And someone was like, you were in the Marines? I go, no, this is television. But the Secret Service agent, I think what had happened there was this was again, so the interpreter, we filmed it in 2004. And so right around then, there was this story that had come in the news of a Secret Service agent who was on George W. Bush's detail, like security detail.
Yeah.
And he was flying from, Detroit to Dallas or somewhere to somewhere. And he had his gun with him, and he was a Secret Service agent.
Yeah.
And he shows up at the airport to get on the plane, and the pilot said, I don't feel comfortable flying with you with the gun. And he goes, but I'm a Secret Service agent. I'm actually flying to go protect the President of the United States. Like, I'm not going to hijack this plane. And the pilot was like, no, I'm not going to let you do that. So that made the news of this guy that was not flying with this guy who was Arab simply because he had a gun.
Oh, he's Arab.
He was Arab Secret Service agent who had a gun.
Wow.
And the pilot said, I don't want to fly with you. And the guy's like, I work for the I'm going to protect the President. No, I'm sorry. Your name is, you know, whatever, Mahmoud. Yeah. I'm not doing this.
I mean, at least they trusted him to protect the President. You know,
well, that's the thing. Step. So the whole point.
They don't trust him to get there, though.
Yeah, they don't get it. You got to bike.
Find your way there.
Yeah, fine. So that's where I think that's what inspired the Secret Service agent in the interpreter being Arab American. And by the way, I played it like this. There was no hello, how are you? There was no accent. It was straight. You know, the only time you realize that he might be Arabic, of Arab descent, is when somebody they're in a little situation room trying to figure something out, and someone I raise my hand, and the guy's like, Muhammad, what do you think? And I'm like, well, I think blah 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 blah. Don't ask me. I'm from Brooklyn. I'm not sure. And
oh, really?
And I went as Mo throughout the whole movie. It was very straight. Yeah.
I'd say once they put the camera on you, it becomes relatively quickly apparent that you're Middle Eastern.
I could be anything. That was the beauty of that role was it didn't matter.
Exactly.
It never even came about.
I see.
There wasn't even a scene where I was like, oh, you have to come to our house. My mother will cook for you. There's none of that stuff. I'm just a guy.
That's cool that they didn't stereotype the role.
That's good. Yeah. And then you read the last page and it's like, he's actually the terrorist.
And then he blows everything up. Well, it's funny.
That's what happens.
Yeah, because I actually was. So in that movie, there's a scene where a bus gets blown up and I had nothing to do with it. I was actually actually on the bus following the guy who is the target of this African nation. And I get off the bus right as it's as it's blown up. Anyway. We've come a long way.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, we've got now voices, creators. And I've always said that from the beginning. It's one thing to have people in front of the camera. It's another thing to have people behind the camera telling our stories.
Sure.
And then the next level will be when we have executives in positions of power.
Green lighting.
Who you'll show up and be like, oh, this is a story of when my mom used to make me eat a lot of, overfeed me. And then the guy's like, I had that experience too.
Yeah.
I find it funny. Let's go.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, speaking of where we just were, Empire, I mean, that's an example of some executives in the music industry that are in place in positions of power. And to get to see them, putting our people into positions and that side of the industry, it's an awesome thing. And I'm sure with movies, it'll.
Yeah,
I mean, Mo and Rami's transitioning to
a lot of people work in there and they get to a certain point, and there are Iranians, Arabs in all these different places. We just don't know, and then we find a way to get together, and we're like, oh, we can all work together maybe.
Yeah, yeah. I think that there's definitely a some fusion that comes together. I mean, again, we have a short language, like we can speak. You know, again, when I tell you about my grandmother, keeping her money in her bra, you might be like, oh, my grandmother kept her money, So there's a shorthand there. And so it's definitely, I think, good to find each other. But also I think it's good to tell our stories that are not some outrageous. I mean, even other movies, like you said, sometimes you would say, oh, this is the good guy. But there's still a bad guy.
Yeah.
Right?
His brother.
yeah. Or even in the movie Crash, my friend Shantu played this Iranian guy in Crash, and he did a great job, and the movie won Oscars and stuff. Yeah. But again, if you analyze it, in the movie, this Iranian guy who owns a hardware store or something buys a gun and almost shoots somebody.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I've never experienced that in my community. Mm-hmm. They live in Los Angeles. I go, most Iranians I know in Los Angeles are either trying to sell you a car or the guy's like a rich dude, mm-hmm. or he's, you know, there's other things you could do.
Yeah.
Right.
But they went with the guy trying to shoot somebody. So
yeah. A lot of that progress is owed to yourself. I mean, you guys came up, you were one of the early comedians, one of the first people in this space to represent like the Middle East, you know, West Asia, North Africa in like this entertainment landscape with the Axis of Evil. You guys really were trailblazers, and I mean, you guys really set the precedent. We're the first to joke about our culture and bring that to the mainstream.
Well, I appreciate you saying that. You know, for us, it wasn't like we were setting out to say, oh, there's a hole, let's fill it.
Yeah.
It was more like, oh, I grew up in America, and I loved Eddie Murphy. I wanted to be Eddie Murphy when I was a kid.
Yeah. Sure.
And then my Iranian parents didn't understand what that meant.
Right.
So they go, no, you should go to college. So I go to college, and I study political science, and then I think maybe I'll be a lawyer, and then I decide maybe I'll be a professor, and then I go, maybe I'll be in advertising. Mm. And the whole time, I continued to act in plays, love being on stage, feel alive on stage. And then in my mid-20s, I realized you live once. So you got to do it or don't do it. Like a lot of us, you know, there was a guy, I was working in an advertising agency, and there was a guy named Joe Ryan who was in his 60s, and he saw this play I was doing. It was a comedy, and he goes, you're funny. Have you ever thought about doing this? I said, Joe, since I was 12, I was in musicals in my junior high school, in high school, in college. Anytime I came across a director or a teacher, they would say, you have the thing. Like, you're comfortable on stage. You could do this.
Yeah.
And I said, Joe, I'm saving money. Maybe when I'm 30, I'll do it. And he goes, listen, I'm in my 60s now, and there were some things I wanted to do in my 20s. I never got around to doing it. So he goes, if you really want to do it, do it. So it was a light bulb moment. And I said, I'm going for it. And this was like 1998. And I just started taking improv classes, started taking stand-up comedy classes. And I just kept going from there, and I didn't stop. Again, I wasn't trying to fill a void for the market.
Yeah.
I was trying to express myself.
Right.
And so I just happened to hit the ground running with, oh, there's nobody else like me doing this.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And then I discover, then I meet Ahmed, and I meet Aaron Cater, and I meet a handful of other guys, and we go, oh, okay, there are some people of similar minds and backgrounds, and then we come together.
Yeah.
And that was it.
And I'm piggybacking off of that, like, you're extremely, you know, you have a lot of accolades, you've done a lot, but if Arab parents, Middle Eastern parents are anything alike, it wasn't good enough, right? As you're kind of...
When was it good enough?
Still isn't. Once I get on this podcast, my mom said, you finally made it.
She's like, have you been on the Habibi house?
Was there a funny moment as you're coming up that was more like a backhanded compliment or just something that stuck
out to you? It's first of all, our people just don't get it, right? Mm-hmm. They don't, you know, and so there were... I remember I did some event. I don't know where the event was, but I did the event. And of course, when you're on stage, people look at you and they think, oh, especially if you end up on an American TV show or you're doing things and they've seen you a couple times on American, not on Persian television, on American TV.
Of course.
So to them, oh, this guy's, a celebrity of sorts, right?
Exactly.
And so then they hire you to go do an event. So you're at the event, you're telling jokes, people are coming up, they want a picture. And then, you know, I forget where it was or what it was, but some guy came up and was like, so what do you do for work? And I'm like, this is it. I go, this is this. And he goes,
you don't have a day job?
You don't sell cars? Or anything? I go, no. He goes, so how do you make money? I go, I make money doing this. And he's like, oh. And like, he just, it wasn't a backhanded compliment. It was more like he didn't understand this concept that you can do this.
Yeah.
And this was a random person.
Some random guy at this event, you know. Yeah. So we would get things like that. And of course, listen, my mom was nervous at the beginning because she had no idea what's going to happen with this. And it wasn't until people were telling her, oh, I saw Maz in this or that, where she was like, oh, okay. Mm. Or showing up at a theater and like, oh, it's people are here laughing. This is cool.
I think it's when you show the bank account. That's when the money hits.
Well, I'll tell you this. Like, for my father, so my father moved back to Iran after we fled Iran because of the revolution.
Yeah.
We were here for about 10 years. My father had been a self-made millionaire in Iran, and he had an electric company. He was a powerful guy. He was kind of like the character I compare him to is the Vito Corleone in The Godfather. Mm. People would come to him needing favors. He'd help them out.
Mm, nice.
And then he brings his money to America, and then he loses the money in bad real estate investments. Mm. Wow. So 10 years later, like in the early 90s, the government of Iran said, look, if you weren't like a cousin of the Shah or in the military, but you were successful under, you know, that previous regime, come back and you can have your properties and do business. So my dad goes back to do business. So he spends the rest of his life, most of his life in Iran. Mm. And he would come back when he had medical problems. Mm. So at one point he came back around 2006. And to your point, I ended up getting a series regular on a TV show then.
Nice.
And when you get a series regular for a TV show, they pay you pretty well.
Yeah.
And so my dad didn't understand the concept.
What show was it? Sorry.
It was a show called The Knights of Prosperity. It was with me, Sofia Vergara, Donald Logue, Kevin Michael Richardson, Lenny Venito, Josh Grissetti. We were six people trying to rob Mick Jagger. It was it was a crazy show, and it was ahead of its time. Nice. It was the creators were Rob Burnett and John Beckerman. They were exec producers on David Letterman, and
big stuff.
It was ABC. It was a big thing.
Yeah.
And so to that point, though, my father didn't understand this concept of like, oh, I'm a series regular on a show.
And he
was at the time he was here for medical purposes, getting ready to go back to Iran. And I go, hey, Dad, I'm a series regular. He's like, oh, great, you know, good. And I'm like, no, I'm going to be on ABC. Oh, okay. And then I was like, they're going to pay me $30,000 a week. Now you're talking.
Money. Right.
So to your point, they don't understand the concept.
And I really want to stress how much you guys have been instrumental in like leading the charge of our like creative input as a culture. And so, you know, I just want to stress that. And
you have
achieved massive success. I mean, at this point, you've given a speech at the White House and introduced Michelle Obama. I'm not sure if you guys mentioned that yet, but that's insane. Two TED Talks you've done. I mean, you've been on all the late night shows. And so you've successfully defied your Iranian parents' expectations.
Yeah, I say, like, I just say to everybody, I go, if you have a passion, don't listen to your parents, don't listen to your girlfriend, don't listen to your boyfriend, don't listen to your husband, wife. If you really have a passion and you're willing to put in the time, because with stand-up, it's, you know, the people go, how can I get into stand-up? Get on stage as much as you can, at least 5 to 10 times a week, and write as much as you can.
Yeah.
That's the formula.
Yeah.
And you see it. You tell some people, they get it, they do it. So I tell people, no matter what your passion is, if you do it, you know, you will find success at some point in some way. And if nothing else, the moment you start doing it, you're successful because you're happy.
Yeah.
You know, that monkey's off your back. You're like, oh, my God, I'm doing what I love doing.
Yeah.
There was a book called The Alchemist where basically it says when you do what you're meant to do in this world, the world conspires with you.
Yes. Yes.
So to me, I feel like I didn't do anything exceptional. I just was doing what I was doing. And every once in a while, they'd be like, oh, come introduce Michelle Obama at the White House. Oh, come be in a movie with Sean Penn. Oh, come do this. Oh, come do that. And because I'd been training and training and training, once they put me in those situations, I was ready to do it. Like we were talking about earlier with this Ed Sheeran song, Azizam, the music director, the producer are both of Iranian descent, but they've been doing their art all these years. And then Ed Sheeran goes, hey, guys, let's do something together. Yeah. Of course.
Yeah.
It's always the overnight success.
Yeah, man.
10 years in the making or 20 years.
We've also hosted the Emmys, which is...
International Emmys.
Which is great.
Yeah.
So now you're a parent yourself. You got two kids, right?
Yeah. Son is 16. My daughter's 14. Alech and I have a nephew who's 17. So I got a little bit of everything. Yeah.
Alech aliyum, God preserve them.
Yeah.
So is this the advice you give them? And why do you still expect them to be doctors?
It's funny. Yeah, they have to be doctors. it's funny you ask.
If you want to be a disappointment, this is how you do it the right way. But
did your Iranian gene turn on your parents?
Well, it's funny you say that because since they were young, I've been telling them, find your passion, find your passion, find your passion.
Yeah.
And it was actually kind of sweet. One time when my son was about 10 years old, we're walking and he's kind of down and he's kind of like, you know, upset. And we're like, what's up? What's wrong, buddy? He's like, I haven't found my passion yet. Mm. And I was like, you're 10 years old. I'm sorry. Like, I realized what I thought was me allowing them to be free was actually putting pressure on them.
Interesting.
Because they were like, I got to find my passion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm now going like, dude, just do whatever you want. And like, my daughter's very musically inclined. And she took piano lessons when she was younger. And then she got sick of it, and then we just let it go. But she like knows every lyric to every song, knows everything about artists and all that stuff. And more recently, she comes out. She's like, "Can I take piano lessons again?" We're like, "Sure." And then she's upstairs in her room just jamming. And I'm like, "Okay, maybe this will lead to something. Maybe it won't. I don't know. As long as it makes you happy, go for it."
Yeah.
And my son too. He's just like a good-hearted person. Like, I think he could be good for the world. I don't know exactly what he's gonna do. He's a smart guy. He's got the pressure now of applying to college, and getting into college now is crazy.
Oh yeah.
And I'm and again, to your point, I'm so, like, I joke about this. My wife is a lawyer by training, and she's Indian, so they have high standards.
Yeah.
And so in her mind, she's like, you know, she wants the kid to get into some great places. And in my mind, I'm like, I'm a comedian. Like, I did a bunch of things. I went to a great school. I dropped out of a PhD program.
Yeah.
And in my mind, your path could be like this.
Right.
And at one day when you're, I don't know, 25, 30 or something, you go, this is what I want to do. And then you just dive in and you find happiness.
Right.
Must be amazing to have a parent like you. I mean, it sounds like it's funny because we're always going to get the opposite of what we intend somehow. Like you, by trying to relieve the pressure that usually we have, it put another pressure. But
yeah.
So many parents don't realize, you know, the fluidity that life can take.
It's a balance. It's a balance between guiding and being too forceful,
I think. Well, it's also, I'll quote Khalil Gibran here. In The Prophet, I used to read that, and I was always like, whatever. And in it, he says, your children are not your own. They come through you. Mm. And if you want them to be a strong arrow, you need to be a strong bow. Mm. And so when they were younger, I'd read it, I'd be like, whatever. Yeah. Now that they're teenagers, where I've realized they really do have their own interests and lives.
Yeah.
Every time I read it, I get emotional. I'm like, oh my God, they're not mine. And I'm going to see them a lot less than I've seen them these past 15, 16 years, you know, and that's just natural.
Yeah.
Yeah, man.
You know?
Yeah.
Where's the weirdest place you've been recognized?
The weirdest place, well, I told you earlier, I was in Petra, and those Jordanians recognized me. I've also...
That's not that weird. I mean, I grew up in Jordan, and you came online.
But it was just like in Petra, like in the middle of like this historical...
Before the internet.
One of the wonders of the world.
Yeah.
I've had places and times... Sometimes I'm surprised. So I'll give you a couple examples. Just recently, Tehran, who's my opening act, we tour together. We were in Philadelphia. We did a morning TV show. And then we're like, is there a breakfast place around here? They go, yeah, right across the street. So we go across the street. I think it was called like JJ's or something. Very like cute little place that I thought was owned by some like old white-haired lady who's going to bring you pancakes. Like it was like a bed and breakfast looking thing.
Yeah.
And instead, this Asian lady welcomes us. And I'm thinking to myself, I wonder if the Asian family bought this place because it doesn't have any, it doesn't have an Asian vibe at all.
Yeah.
And she's got an accent and everything. And so we order. The food is amazing. And then once the check comes, I give her my card. And she comes back. She goes, are you really him? And I go, who? She goes, Maz Jobrani. I go, yeah. And she goes, oh, my God, I'm a huge fan. I've watched all your stuff. I'm Indonesian.
Oh.
And I'm like... What a random thing that this Indonesian lady, like if I'd walked in and the lady were Persian or Arab or something, I'd be like, maybe. But the fact that she was Indonesian, I had no idea, but somehow she's seen my stuff. You just have no idea who's going to see, especially nowadays.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And the other one that happened recently was, so I did a movie called Jimmy Vestwood, American Hero, which is this silly movie about this guy in Iran who wins the green card lottery to come to America and he wants to be a cop and save the day. And he's just a bumbling idiot, but somehow he saves the day. And it was my homage to the Pink Panther movies where Peter Sellers was this bumbling idiot.
Yeah.
So in the movie, I have a scene that we did where it's me and my mother. We've won the green card lottery to come to America. And there's turbulence on the plane.
Yeah.
And my mother in Persian, she goes, Allo Akbar chagad dast andaz dare. She says, you know, she's like praying to God, like, why is there so much turbulence? And as we say that, there's a white guy in a suit who's kind of staring at us. And I go, Mom, like in Persian, I go, you got to, don't say Allahu Akbar. Like this is, you know, these people are on edge. You got to say things that they like. And she goes, what did I say? I just said Allahu, and she says it again. I just said Allahu Akbar. Allahu Akbar, astaghfirullah. She says another thing. And then I turn to the guy and he's staring at me and I go, Jesus Christ. And then the plane like has turbulence and I go, Allahu Akbar. And then the guy takes his gun and goes, freeze, air marshal. Oh, so that's the scene.
Wow.
That's funny. That scene, the movie came out. It was a silly movie. Mm-hmm. It did all right. Like my fans saw it. But then people cut that clip and they put it online. So now that clip goes viral for like, don't say Allahu Akbar on a plane.
Come to think about it.
So to that point, I was flying from Copenhagen, Denmark, and I had to stop in London and then from London come to L.A. This is a European tour we did. And I'd bought two separate tickets. So in my mind, I'm like, oh, God, I'm going to go there. They're going to make me take my suitcase to London, check it again in London. You know, I got And I'm like, I'm going to ask the guy at the counter if he could just take it all the way. So I go there, and the guy, it's like 6 in the morning. It was after a long tour, and the guy's like doing his thing. And as he's doing it, he looks at me. He's like, he goes, Allahu Akbar. And I go, excuse me? He goes, you're the guy from the clip. I go, yeah. He goes, I'm Syrian, you know, and I've seen the clip. I go, oh, that's cool. And then he hooked me up all the way through.
All the way.
Hilarious. Two bags.
Maz Jobrani, where can we see you next?
I'm touring all over the country. I'll be going to Australia in the summer to do shows. So I'm always touring. People can follow me at Maz Jobrani on TikTok, Instagram, all that stuff. And then MazJobrani.com has the dates. And I just encourage people. I say, come out, have a night of laughter. Mm. Audiences are mixed. My own people always don't get it. They're like, so is the show in Persian? I go, no, the show's in English. And they go, oh. I go, haven't you seen my clips? They go, no, I don't watch your shit. I'm like, it's free. Watch it. Yeah. And I got a YouTube special currently called The Birds and the Bees. And I've got a Netflix special called Immigrant. And you can't miss me. If you just, you know, put Maz Comedian, I come
absolutely,
up.
Absolutely.
I saw The Birds and the Bees. It was on Tubi.
Yeah, it's on Tubi. Oh, it was on Tubi as well?
Yeah, apparently.
Oh, okay, that's cool. All right.
And your other special, the COVID one, was there too. The
COVID one, yeah, that's called Pandemic Warrior. We filmed that in Dubai. Yeah. I've had seven specials, I think.
What's your favorite one?
Gosh, I mean, Immigrant was great because I got to do it at the Kennedy Center. Trump had just become president, I shit on him a lot. It's on Netflix. And there was a budget. So they were like, we have a budget. So I was able to, you know, get Public Enemies, Fight the Power as my walk-on song. It was pretty cool. But I've loved, you know, I'm always talking about things that interest me. So Birds and the Bees was great, you know. I don't know.
All right. Yeah. Well,
one final yes or no rapid-fire question.
Yes.
Yes or no?
Yes or no. Do you believe in aliens?
No.
I mean, why write off immigrants so readily?
This is our Persian friend right here.
I only believe in illegal aliens.
The Aziz and the Junes met the Habibis finally.
Yalla.
So thank you so much for having us.
We appreciate you coming out, Maz.